Welcome to the Delipod with me, James Delipod. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but I am so... Do you know what? As the Americans say, I am super excited to get Andrew Bridgen on the pod. Because Andrew is topical at the moment, really topical, and that's very unlike me. B, he's about to fly off to America, so I'm really glad I've grabbed him before he goes, because I think this is going to be really important, this chat we're going to have. Andrew, I've got lots of questions to ask you. I'm going to grill you. I mean, not, you know, lightly, you know, a bit like who was the saint that got grilled? And then he said, right, I'm toasted on that side, so turn me over. That it's going to be a bit like that, you know, friendly grilling. Just tell us who you are and why we're talking to you.
My name's Andrew Bridgen. I'm the Conservative Member of Parliament for North West Leicestershire. I've been the elected MP since May 2010. I'm considered to be on the right wing of the Conservative Party. I'm an ERG member. Led Brexit for the East Midlands. I've increased my majority in my seat at every election since 2010. And when I took it from Labour, and now I've got a majority of, on paper, of 20,400. My seat's got the highest economic growth in the UK from what was probably the poorest seat in Leicestershire. It's the only seat in Leicestershire and Rutland with above average UK salaries now. It's one of the happiest places to live in the country. It's got the longest council tax freeze in history of 15 years. Since we took over the council from Labour, we've never put council tax up at the district council. And it's a centre of population of the UK. We're Middle England, furthest from the CNA direction.
And all that stuff would have been, when I was like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I used to come around and have a smoke with you in the House of Commons. And you were definitely one of the MPs that I found most simpatico, because you're a straight talker. You like smoking cigarettes, which is always a good thing.
And always a good place to get gossip from.
Good point. And I liked your attitudes towards, you know, you were anti people sponging off the state. You believed in, you have a work ethic. You believe in prosperity and, I mean, all the conservative things. But of course, since we became friends, I've completely changed. I mean, we'll talk more about this in a moment. I've come to the view that the parliamentary democracy is a busted flush, that our elected parliamentarians are absolutely bloody useless, that our government is not really the government we imagine it to be. They're just puppets of a globalist elite and so on and so on. But we'll come to that in a moment. I've been...
Tell me the bad news, James. Tell me the bad news.
I've been speaking to you on and off about this stuff in the last 2 years, but mostly off, because I'd kind of given up on you. And then you surprised me by suddenly coming out of the woodwork. Is that the right phrase? You've made a cracking speech, which I think people on my side of the argument should not dismiss as simply Andrew Bridgen covers his ass. I think there's more to it than that, but you can tell me about this. But you made a speech very recently in Parliament lasting 20 minutes.
With interventions, yeah. It was about a 17-minute speech. I think there were about four or five interventions.
Tell us what the speech is about. And by the way, can you tell us where people can get to see this speech? Because it seems to be quite heavily censored. I mean, if you do a search for it, you'll get loads of stuff saying Andrew Bridgen gets jeered, Andrew Bridgen does it, you know, makes a fool of himself. No one wants. It seems that the internet doesn't want people to know how to find your speech.
I think it's shadow banned. You can get it if you go on to Dr. John Campbell, and if you look, it's vaccine potential harms. It's a 20-minute video there. That's had about 600,000 views. That video actually has been. We've checked the internet. I've got one of my friends who's very good on this sort of stuff. And up to about 24 hours ago, it had been viewed 5.2 million times, not counting Getter. And it had been viewed 5.2 million times for at least 18 minutes of the 20-minute duration, which is pretty outstanding for social media, I'd say. And, yeah, and for a backbench and adjournment debate.
And imagine how much more it would viewers it would have if you could find it easily. If you could do a search and
It's banned. You can't view it on TikTok. It's banned on TikTok. It's banned on. I did a podcast for something called Irreverend, and that got banned on Facebook. Well, the person who posted it got banned for 30 days on Facebook, which is pretty amazing, really.
It is, given that I was listening.
As soon as I'm on with you, I mean, we're going to get banned anyway, aren't we?
Oh, totally. Yeah. You are totally banned.
Really, James, it's just me and you having a chat, isn't it, really?
Well, I'm going to try and make sure that maybe your mother.
My speech in the adjournment, I've been putting in for that. Well, I took part in a speech about 6 weeks ago, which was in Westminster Hall, which is as a result of a petition request about the vaccine, people with vaccine harmed and compensation. That was an interesting debate. I met Dr. Asim Malhotra, who's a world-renowned cardiologist. He presented a paper, scientific paper, pointing out all the evidence for the harms and the minimal benefit from the vaccine. That was several months ago, and he's not had any scientific rebuttal. I thought that we've got a chance of getting an adjournment debate. I was told I couldn't have one. I hadn't won in the shuffle, and I think someone then at the last minute dropped out, and at about 3 days' notice, suddenly I'd got the adjournment debate on Tuesday the 13th of December, and I prepared my speech, and the rest, as they say, is history.
So give us the top line
that Dr. Malhotra has produced his paper. He claims that, you know, this is a huge scandal, that there are massive harms and minimal benefits from the mRNA vaccines. They're causing harm it's going to be the biggest issue that's going to hit healthcare in our lifetimes. It's a challenge to democracy, and that no one's come out and actually rebutted any of his claims. And how have we got into this situation? By willful blindness. And we've seen examples of where individuals or institutions have decided to turn a blind eye to what they can see going on for various reasons of having a quiet life, not wanting conflict, to protect their own reputations from attack potentially. And, you know, things like, you know, how did Jimmy Savile perpetrate all his crimes for decades in the BBC when everyone knew about it, but no one did anything? And, you know, and Harvey Weinstein in Hollywood, or you know, various things like that. Or how did mid-staffs happen and no one in the NHS actually said anything? All the practices that were going on there for so long.
Did you mention all this stuff in your speech?
Or indeed the Antikontin scandal, which was brought out in the miniseries Dope Stick, where, you know, a medicine that was harming people was allowed to be passed out and continued and covered up for. So we've got how this could have happened. And then I talked about how the big pharma's power through, you know, their pressure, the financial power, they through lobbying to influence politicians, their funding of educational research and think tanks that they control the scientists, you know, through their huge pockets and advertising, they control the media. And we get all those things together. It's not surprising then that we can have the rollout of a vaccine that's not tested properly and is doing harm to people and is for minimal benefit being pushed by the media and the government, with resulting huge vaccine harms which are not being reported. We've got more yellow card reports, and they're grossly underreported, probably by 90%. More yellow card adverse effect reports for the mRNA vaccines in the last couple of years than than all yellow card reporting for the previous 40 years on all drugs. The worldwide figures for more reported harms from mRNA vaccines in 18 months than all reported harms from all conventional vaccines for the last 50 years. You know, and we have stopped vaccines before that have been rolled out. You know, the swine flu vaccine in 1976 was found to produce Guillain-Barré syndrome in only 1 in 100,000 adults, and that was withdrawn for that reason. And the rotavirus vaccine in 1999 was withdrawn because it was causing apparently a bowel obstruction in 1 in 10,000 children. That was withdrawn. And when we're looking at, you know, Pfizer's own data, the raw data of their testing trials would indicate that there's at least a 1 in 800 severe adverse reaction to the vaccine. And that's 1 in 800 because Pfizer only followed the people who were vaccinated for 8 weeks after vaccination. And some of the symptoms, you know, the heart problems, the pulmonary embolism, stroke, some of those don't materialize until after 8 weeks. So it's considerably more than, you know, than 1 in 800 are being badly affected. And now what really pushed me over the edge was that the MRHA now recommending that these experimental vaccines are suitable for children down to the age of 6 months. That isn't a child, that's a baby. There is no benefit whatsoever for them having it, and there's a huge risk. Figures from America, from the the Journal of American Medical Associations, they did a test on, I don't know who handed their children over for this, but 7,600 odd under fives, and 1 in 200 were still in hospital 3 months after vaccination, because that was the end of their trial. Well, I mean, this is absolutely obscene. It can't go forward, and it's got to be stopped. And everyone seems to ignore the scientific data. No one wants to look at it, and you've got to ask yourself why. It's not reported in the mainstream media. Huge interest on social media. I've done a few interviews over the last few days for various outlets, and they've all told me they've never had such viewer interaction over any issue they've ever covered. But the BBC, ITV, Sky, Channel 4, all the mainstream newspapers, no interest whatsoever.
It is extraordinary. Although, funnily enough, even though I've noticed none of the newspapers or TV channels have covered your speech, they've all gone big on Andrew Bridgen suspended for some
admin problem. Yes,
you've been suspended for something to do with Ghana. You had a freebie to Ghana or something.
I had a freebie to Ghana to go and sort out a tax issue for a company with a sales arm in my constituency. And effectively what I've been suspended for is on six or eight emails over 18 months to ministers making the case for this company, that they are legitimate, the trees are all there, I've seen it all. I didn't write on every email that I'd had a free trip to Ghana. I declared it in my register of interest at the time, and I told every minister personally, I've been there, I've seen the trees with these people, I've been to Ghana, and it's a genuine company, because Inland Revenue were treating them as a scam and saying that there are no trees. I had meetings with the Ghanaian Forestry Commission. I had meetings with our High Commission in Accra. It was a three-day trip, and I fully declared it all. And I got a two-day suspension for that, and I got a three-day suspension for after the investigation had been completed by the Commissioner for Standards. I'd been told in the summer by a very reliable, very senior Labour MP that there were rumours going around she'd been touting for a peerage from the Labour Party. And I wrote a private and confidential letter to her after she'd completed her investigation into me and passed all the papers to the committee for consideration, so she'd done with it, asking her, saying, well, you know, there are these rumours flying around. I don't want to offend you, but, I mean, these rumours are flying around. It may well be that they're... I mean, the letter's available. You can see the letter. It may well be that it's purely people seeking to damage your good reputation. But given, you know, that you are finishing in a few months' time, which finishes at the end of this month, could you reassure me that there is no truth in these rumours? That is a question only you can answer. have you been touting for a peerage or an honour? And she didn't answer the question, referred that to the Standards Committee, and they gave me 3 days as an MP for asking a senior officer of the House a question of whether she'd been touting for a peerage.
Yeah. Andrew, I mean, you don't even need to explain yourself to me. It's so bloody obvious that what is happening to you is what happened. I mean,
I would point out that while this has been going on, about 3 weeks ago, one of my colleagues in the House was found to have taken £150,000 from a Russian, wrote to various agencies on headed note paper, which he hadn't declared the whatever he had from the Russian, and had written to various agencies saying what a jolly good chap he was on headed note paper, and he was let off with a apology letter.
I think, Andrew, I think you're lucky because...
Well, apparently they wanted to suspend me for 2 weeks, in which case I would be having a recall petition.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What, you mean that the you get ousted from your seat,
yeah,
basically?
Yeah.
Do you think they... sorry, we're getting a bit inside.
I'm not allowed to say that I think that they've been unfair to me or anything, because otherwise they will give me another suspension for that.
No, I think it's... Look, listen, I think the nation
is... I probably deserve it.
You do. I, as a taxpayer, I'm mightily pissed off that your trip to... Your freebie, your lavish freebie to Accra...
It's interesting, because part of my defence was that while I had when I was in Accra, I went to the High Commission, and obviously I met with the business attaché, and I said, why have I had to come here? This is a British-owned company, the biggest plantation of trees in West Africa, 10,000 acres, employing 700 Ghanaians. I said, why didn't you go up there and check these trees out? And then you could vouch for them to the Inland Revenue. I wouldn't. And the Inland Revenue now accept that they are a legitimate company and they shouldn't be referred to as a tax scam. It's all genuine. And the guy said he hadn't got a budget to travel that far up the jungle, because it wasn't a pleasant tribe. It's about 5 hours off road. There was no picnic, I was pretty upset with that. But then I went with Mere Plantations to a restaurant round the corner out straight after that meeting, and we'd only been in there 5 minutes, and this business attaché turned up with this huge entourage of people he was entertaining for lunch. So I went to his table and said, yes, have you got a budget for this? And he said he had. So when I got back, I reported him to the Minister for Africa and the Foreign Office and said, this guy's completely incompetent and he's a waste of space. And he was moved 4 weeks later, which was great for our, because he was incompetent. I shouldn't have had to go there. He should have gone and done it.
Look, I totally sympathise with this, but let's get back to the nitty gritty.
No, we don't use that phrase. That's a horrible...
Yeah, well, no, but you know what? That's a fallacy. The idea that nitty gritty derives from the slave era, it was, I think, one of those invented pieces of crap that was drawn up. But anyway,
let's not go there.
No, let's not go there. Lots of people are. You very much impressed. I on the way here to this, on the way back from my the reason I haven't shaved is because I came straight from my personal trainer, because I was getting in a session before Christmas, because I'm going to go 2 weeks now without a personal trainer, so I had to rush here and then get it all sorted. Anyway, on the way we played your interview with Lawrence Fox and with Jamie Franklin, and the wife was really impressed with your performance. She said it's really great. He doesn't sound weird. He doesn't sound like a conspiracy theorist. He doesn't sound like he lays his facts out. I like the fact he's got a scientific background, which makes him more credible. Doesn't sound hysterical. Blah blah blah. So you've got the regular people.
That sounds very dangerous, James.
What?
They think that was very dangerous. You see.
Who?
Those who might want to label me as a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. But I have to say, there are people on where I am who are asking the question I'm about to ask you. Where were you these last 2 or 3 years? Because it's not like we didn't have a chat.
I was sceptical about the lockdowns. I was kept on board by lies, which said that they'd done a full impact assessment of the wider impact on society. I think if you look back to a year ago, and if you go into Hansard and look at my contribution to the Plan B debate, which I was very clear that there was no need for any further lockdowns or restrictions, that all the data coming out of South Africa about the Omicron, the attenuation of the virus to which was already not very lethal to even milder, which is the normal evolution of a virus over time, to be more transmissible and less pathogenic, and that I couldn't support any further. I voted four times against the government last December. I voted against the masks, I voted against the mandate, I voted against any lockdowns, I voted against everything. Okay. And I finished my speech off by saying that the only real pandemic we're suffering in this country is a pandemic of fear, and we've got to stop it straight away.
Right. But I'm not interested in the bits where you got it right, or you know where you were with the good guys. I want to know the bits that you now feel.
Oh,
totally...
We shouldn't have had any lockdowns. We shouldn't have had any lockdowns. That they were unnecessary. We now know. I mean, evidence has come to me now. We now know that COVID-19 was in Europe and this country probably from August 19. I've seen some compelling evidence from medical biopsy samples that were taken in August 19 in Italy, and I've seen the geographic location. 15% of those are infected now when they test them for COVID-19. So it was rampant around Europe in late summer 19, before we had the lockdowns. It's clear that the hospitals weren't overloaded and there weren't people dying in the streets. So, and undoubtedly the powers that be must have known that. So yeah. What the hell's going on, and why did we have to have lockdowns, which have cost economically, damaged us emotionally and psychologically, and damaged our population, made us far less efficient, damaged our children immensely. Yeah. You know, we should never have stopped the schools being open. We should never have any lockdowns. The furlough scheme was unnecessary, and this has led us to where we are now, and they won't let go. They want us to have more and more of these vaccines. I'm double vaccinated. I had my history of COVID is I actually had COVID at the full Wuhan, full strength in March 20. It went round here like a dose of something nasty. It was the worst thing I'd ever had. I've never had a day off ill with an illness in my life. I've had bits of colds where I may have gone home early from work, and then by the next morning, I feel better and I go back to work. I've never had a whole day off. I've had a day off when I broke my leg playing rugby and things like that, but I've never had a day off. This knocked me for six. I had about 6 days, and I was never used to feeling worse the day after. I'm used to feeling better, so it worried me. And I would say it took about 6 days for it to lift, and I didn't feel brilliant for about a month. I had two AstraZeneca vaccinations, which I regret. And then I had Omicron in early December 21, and Omicron compared to the full strength wasn't 1.5 out of 10. It was a bit of a headache, a bit of a snotty nose, a few aches and pains. It was nothing.
Okay. Let me rewind a second, because I reckon that we would have had a chat in about March 2020, because we were still on speakers there. We'd have compared notes, because I had whatever it is, the nasty bug that was going around at about that time. It was, I tell you when I got it, was about a week after the Brexit celebrations thing in London. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Were you there?
I was there. I was there with Julia Hartley Brewer. And we went with Nigel Farage to the Cavalry and Guards Club afterwards.
Okay, so I didn't go to that, but I went to the one before. There was one at that really expensive club that the membership's like 20,000 a year, or you know, the Hartford.
Oh, they wouldn't let me in.
Okay, so I went to that, and I went to another thing somewhere else, and all the deplorables like you were there, so we'd have had a chat about this probably about your illness. So, but I knew then. I haven't got a science degree like you. I knew then, I'd spoken to people that told me don't take the vaccine, so I didn't. I had no intention of doing so. I knew quite early on that they were lying to us on every level. I didn't know the scope of the lies and the scale of the lies, but I knew, and I would have told you this, because over the period when the government was sort of forcing us to lock down, even though it had never been used before for any pandemic, I would have seen you as my great white hope. I mean, I'd given up on most MPs, but I was thinking Andrew Bridgen is going to, I don't know, fall on his sword, do some stuff. But instead, you didn't. I mean, okay, so you were on the right side of some votes, yeah, or quite a few votes. But there must be some votes that you really, really
absolutely. I was cajoled.
What were your worst mistakes?
The worst one was actually voting for the mandate on the social care workers, which I'd said to my whip, like, I just can't vote for this. You know, I just can't vote for this. And in the end, I did, and I really regret that. I'm really, really sorry. That's a criminal.
What were you thinking?
Well, I didn't know as much as I know now. I know a lot more now. I mean, clearly, I mean, at that time, we were still being told that after you've had the jabs, you're going to be 100% not going to catch COVID and you can't transmit it. Well, I mean, that what we now know is that was lies from the start. That was another one of lies. I guess I didn't want to believe that we were all being lied to. It is quite... I mean, you know, it does change your perspective on the world, and look at the position I'm in, where now I have to come to the conclusion that we have been lied to. We've been lied to by scientists, we've been lied to by politicians, and we've been lied to by advisors.
Yeah, good.
Who clearly knew all the signs, because they weren't bothered, because they were actually having parties, as it turned out.
Yeah, I think it's important to dwell on this point a while, because that lots of people who sort of follow me and you know, I've said to them, I think Andrew is sincere. I like him. I kind of trust him. And they say, well, for me, it's pretty much a deal breaker that he voted for that social care to mandate it for social care workers. I mean, apart from, even if you did believe it, that the vaccine was safe and effective, which, subsequently we learned.
Bodily autonomy.
What was so?
Well, it's the Nuremberg, and then we know why was it the Nuremberg rules, and that's because of what the Nazis did.
Yeah. So were you kind of coerced into it? Were you bullied by the whips, or were you trying to? What was going on in your head that day?
I don't know, but I couldn't have been thinking straight. We were locked down again, weren't we? Because I seem to remember it was from home. It's not so easy. I mean, when you're not with colleagues and you can't chat about things, it's much, you know, we were all locked down in all our constituencies, weren't we? We weren't coming into Parliament. I mean, it's been a very strange Parliament, because you know, 2 years in, and then you've got all these new people. I mean, I don't know all their names, but normally you would know all their names because you'd have seen them in the chamber. I mean, and then you're 3 years into a parliament and you've got all these new intake, which you don't know their names because you've never been in debates with them and never seen them in the tea room. Perverse.
Yes.
And I suppose, it's much harder for those of us who wish to plot to do so when we're all separated, divide and conquer.
I think you make a good point there. And if
it is any protection for the conservative, more libertarian wing, I mean, we were the only ones voting against anything. I mean, there was no opposition, and all the worst things that the government wanted, and looking back, they were the worst things, the opposition parties wanted more of them. I mean, they're demanding more of them. It's unbelievable. There was no opposition.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, what
was the point of voting against the government when there was no prospect of ever turning it over?
I suppose.
I did vote against the government, but it was, you know, only a token, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But did you not? Okay, so I agree. It was very much part of the government's tactic to keep troublesome backbench MPs locked in their homes or in their constituencies, while this kind of mini cabinet just railroaded through all this legislation.
I think I compared it to government by diktat. I mean, even the COVID measures were being brought in on a Sunday, and we weren't voting on them until a Wednesday. Well, I mean, how does that work? They're already in. We must do this immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. we'd lost parliamentary democracy over a cold.
Were you not on the blower to various other kind of deplorables? What would you call yourself? I mean, you used to be called the Spartans, didn't you, in the days when we believed that Brexit?
Well, when we were going to deliver Brexit, yes.
But
we had the ERG group. I mean, we didn't have a WhatsApp group for any dissent on this. We've got one now, which was called the COVID Recovery Group, which that sort of came into being when we all got back to Parliament, and that led to the big rebellion over Plan B, where I think 101 colleagues voted against the government, and that scared them. But we still had a bit of a lockdown, didn't we? Even that Christmas, we also then wasted a whole, was it till the end of April, still giving away those bloody PCR tests, which was another waste of money.
More than a waste. I mean, it was absolute crime, wasn't it? It was clearly certain people, friends of cabinet ministers. I mean, look at Matt Hancock, who was the health secretary at the time, the landlord of his pub.
It's interesting that, you know, that's an issue which has never been brought to standards.
No, it's extraordinary. A bigger deal, you might say, than having a freebie tip 3 days in Accra and going
already
off.
Already declared on my register of interests.
Yeah, but okay. So, but let's not try and look like we're trying to let you off the hook. Because I mean, it's a given, I think, for anyone who could observe these things, that you are being made an example of. They don't like what you're saying. But I'm just curious
to discourage any others.
Yeah, of course, pour encourager les autres. So, but there are what 650 MPs in Parliament, and
not the Sinn Féin ones, obviously.
Okay. But back in the day, in the days when I used to believe in the system, I used to think there are these kind of feisty MPs like Andrew Bridgen, but also that there are a few more. I'm quite shocked that I think apart from Christopher Chope has spoken out.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Sir Desmond Swain's had a few goes.
Sir Desmond Swain, yeah, sorry. That's
Danny Kruger's showing potential. He spoke. The Devizes MP from 2019.
I used to think he was a complete cuck, but I suppose is it because he's also a born again Christian that he kind of gets the devil element in this? Is that the deal?
Well, I wouldn't mock the Christians if I were you. I mean, I think we need all our friends and together. Quite honestly, I think. Christian values are certainly at question in what the government's policies have been, the harms that have been done. When you look at the evidence, it's indefensible. It's indefensible. I can't go along with it any longer, quite honestly. So I got to the point where the evidence is so overwhelming and the radio silence from the mainstream media is so deafening that I put in for that adjournment debate. I've been putting in for a couple of weeks trying to get it, and I wanted it before Christmas because now was the time to strike, and then it happened. And so the rest is history. We've had no pickup from the mainstream media, but massive coverage on social media. I've had thousands, literally thousands. I've never had so many emails from around the world and the UK on any topic. I mean, we're talking about 500 emails on this a day coming in.
What sort of things are they saying?
They're saying that they support me and thank you for speaking out. And a lot of them are telling me about how they've suffered harms themselves, or they've got relatives who've died. And a number of them are doctors, nurses, scientists, some people in the supply chain to Pfizer that said it was immoral what was going on, and they left their job because they weren't going to be involved in this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Lots of people who wanted to make contact with groups who are campaigning on this, which I've made contact with, and I've just done a podcast earlier today with NHS 100, who are, they've been campaigning for not to be forced to be mandated to take the jab, and they're sceptical about the whole treatment thing. So there's lots of that, and
How big a deal
sort of
is it?
Taken over my life in the last week.
I was going to ask you, how big a deal is it for you speaking out in this way? I mean, are you basically hanging yourself out to dry? Is this the death of your political career?
What political career?
Yeah, all right. I was being polite.
Well, the big thing was when what pushed me was the MHRA. After the adjournment debate that I spoke in, when I got notification that the MHRA had approved the vaccines, the Pfizer vaccine for use on babies down to 6 months, then I asked a PMQ a couple of weeks ago. I didn't have one on the order paper. I told Rishi I was going to bob, and I told him what the question was because I wanted a good answer. And I said, you know, I called on him to overturn the approval by the MHRA that these are not suitable for babies or necessary for babies. And I got the stock answer back that he believes that they're safe and effective. Well, that then made me a little bit angry, and I'm really determined that we're not going to approve them for babies, especially given the data from America about the risks. And, you know, I am coming to Parliament to see this done to children. I think I already told you, I've spoken. My response to the Queen's speech was, we owe our children because they're the most damaged out of all the bad things we've done during COVID, the lockdowns, everything have damaged our young people more than anybody else. You know, when I've got a 4-year-old, you know, he's spent half of his life in lockdown. I mean, that's, you know, I'm 58. 2 years is bad enough. But when you're 4, it's half your life. And somebody who's 2, it's all their life. You know, it's terrible what we've done. And we've really damaged them and their education and their social conditioning and everything. And when now we're going to vaccinate these babies. So then I was determined to get this adjournment debate. And I got it. And the speech was what it was. I referenced it. I think it was 32 scientific references I gave out as a briefing after I sat down. My staff sent that out. I'd done it all with Asim Malhotra and various scientists. So I knew that the media would want to attack me. So I sent them all the references for all the facts that I'd given out so they couldn't. And I knew then that if they couldn't attack me and do that, then they'd have to ignore me. And that's what they did. But then we got it out on social media, and okay, it's shadow banned and it's banned off this and banned off that, but still millions and millions and millions of people around the world have seen it.
How much grief have you had from the whips and people like that over this?
Actually, I haven't had a bit, but I've had a bit from some colleagues across the house, because what's actually happened is that a lot of people have watched that, and millions of people have watched it who are somebody's constituents, and they've emailed me and then said, I'm emailing my MP asking them why they weren't at that important debate and what they think about it, and they should support you. Well, clearly that's then creating quite a bit of casework for colleagues. So they're all getting asked that question. That's, you know, across all constituencies. And some of them seem to think it's my fault for causing the issue.
Well, go on. Can you give me some examples?
I'm not going to name names, but I mean...
But what sort of comments have you had? I mean, is it hate mail or hate emails? Or?
No, they're verbal comments in the tea room and various things. And, you know, and then some people have emailed me the comments that the MPs have given them back to me and said, you know, don't believe Andrew Bridgen. He's going to get suspended from the House and he's a liar and all this rubbish. Any sort of deflection. Some of them have just sent the constituent, the minister who responded to my adjournment debate, Maria Caulfield's 10-minute response, which is that she's a nurse and she saw people dying of COVID. I don't doubt that. Dying of something. And that the vaccines, she believes that the vaccines made all the difference. She quoted some figures, which I intervened on her and said, what you're doing is you're using what's called scientific modelling. That's the lowest form of evidence for any science at all. And in fact, that modelling is more science fiction than science fact. And actually, she liked that very much. And then she came out with the old trope, you know, they're safe and effective. Safe and effective. They didn't counter any of the evidence I'd given. She didn't talk about Dr. Malhotra's evidence that he produced, and that was it, really. So
great. wife wanted me to ask you, and I suppose it is an important question. Are we still under a sort of wartime footing in which she was asking in the context of you being censored by the media, by the mainstream media, which is that, you know, are they not reporting on it? Well, I mean, I have my own theories on why they're not reporting on it, but are they currently under some kind of gagging order from the government preventing them from talking about vaccine harms because we're still supposedly on a wartime footing, or is it just they're lazy cowards?
I don't know. You'd have to ask them. I mean, a number of senior people in those media who aren't talking about it have told me they know the truth, but they're scared because they'll get sacked if they talk about it.
Right.
It's deeply worrying. I mean, that's deeply worrying. I don't know. I mean, the BBC educate, inform and entertain. I mean, obviously, there's two sorts of BBC. There's BBC in London, and the other one I come into contact with is the local BBC from my constituency, and I have a relationship with three, which is just my seat's bordering two counties, and we're in Leicestershire, and I border Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire. So Derby's only a few miles away from my northern border, as is Nottingham, and obviously Leicester, I'm in Leicestershire. So I do local media for BBC Derby, Leicester and Nottingham, and I was quite happy to go and talk about vaccine harms. And then I'd got the interview lined up, and then I got a text from BBC Derby, who was the first on the list, and they said that they couldn't do the interview because the London had said that this is a sensitive issue and it's all being handled from London, or not handled from London. So basically, what should they just kibosh me doing any local media? They're not going to let me loose on BBC Derby or Leicester or Nottingham, you see.
I get that. But are we saying, is there any legislation still in place which prevents these media organs telling the truth?
I don't think so, no. I think we got rid of all those 5 hours before we ended up in the next crisis to scare the people, which is the war in Ukraine.
Ah, yes. Well observed that. So, okay. So what was your wake-up moment? The moment when you went from believing what the scientists and the pharma executives said to realizing that everyone is lying. And
I think it was when the revelation over the parties, and you know, the bring your own bottle party, and also then the duplicity of that is, because Jeff, you worked out why it was a bring your own bottle party, don't you?
No, tell me.
Well, it's very straightforward, isn't it? I've been entertained at number 10 on numerous occasions over the 12 years I've been an MP, and you know, it's got one of the best stocked drinks cabinets in the world, I imagine. That's because they knew it was illegal, they knew it was wrong, and obviously if they've indented for 50 bottles of wine that have been used from the cellar, there's some paperwork. So if you bring your own bottles, the party never happened, because they knew they couldn't have stocks going out, there'd be paperwork. So that was the guilty mind, that they knew what they were doing was completely against the rules of illegal. They were covering it up before they started. I mean, that's pre-planned deceit of the public, and no one was supposed to know. But there were they knew all the science in number 10. They'd have all the up-to-date figures about everything. And, you know, they're telling us one story on the media, and they're also then telling us that there was no social, there was no social distancing, no masks, party and let rip. And also, I always try and be as pleasant as possible with the people I come into contact with. I think, you know, I get interviewed a lot. I know a lot of BBC cameramen, and, you know, some of them have come to me and said, you know, during the lockdown, you know, the mandates the BBC were given to go into number 10, you know, you've got to have all these tests for COVID. Only one person allowed in, so that the cameraman was having to do the sound as well for all those staged presentations of Project Fear to the public and Witty and whoever was on that day. And he said, if I'd done all that and I'm there filming and recording, he said, if I'd swung the camera around behind the camera, there were dozens and dozens of advisors not wearing masks, not socially distancing, and just lounging around.
Okay.
So then, clearly, it was a play.
Fine. So, look, obviously I wasn't the person who kind of raised your awareness, even though I was telling you this stuff. I mean, you sent me, are you allowed to say, you sent me an email, didn't you? What did it say?
I didn't, I sent you a text.
A text, yeah. What did it say?
And I said, sorry, James, everything you said is true.
Yeah.
You told me it was true.
So did you think I was a nutcase? Did you think just James has just got the wrong end of the stick or what?
I hoped you had, and I really, you know, I wish what I know now was wrong, but unfortunately, I mean, as a conservative, I think we have to live in the world as it is, not how we'd like it to be. And I think we've been living in the world how we'd like it to be, but this is how it is. And now, knowing what it is, I think we have to stand up to it and fight it. If we don't, I don't know where we're going to end up.
Is there any other MP who knows what's going on?
I think there is. I think some of them are scared. Some of them are still in denial. And obviously some are on board, aren't they?
Because we all think in the outside world that all of you MPs basically got the saline, that you're all in on it.
I'm vaccine harm myself.
Did you get damaged by it?
Yes.
Oh, you poor sod. I have no schadenfreude at all, even though, you know, some of us knew. But I think everyone who took it was basically duped. What have you had?
I've never had any health problems in my life. I've never take tablets or anything. And this summer, I never had an allergy. I had a month of solid hay fever where I couldn't breathe properly. And then as soon as that went in August, my body just came out in hives all over. So like nettle rash all over my body, everywhere. Very, very itchy and raised about the size of a penny. And I looked on the internet and it said, you know, vaccine harm. And so I started taking very strong antihistamines, which I've never had to take in my life. And I have to take two of those tablets every day. One at night and one in the morning, else it starts, I can feel it coming back. The first sign will be that my lips will, in the morning, it'll feel like I've been sucking on a nettle all night. My lips will be like this and all swollen. And my body starts feeling itchy. So I have to take two of these tablets every day just to be moderately normal. That is an autoimmune response. My immune system's damaged.
Yeah, yeah.
And interestingly, James, When I confided this in my circle of friends who are about my own age, male, two of them said, that's amazing because we've had exactly the same thing happen to us.
Right. Well,
that's probably out of about six or seven people, two of them. So got exactly that. I reported it to my doctor and I told her this is because of the vaccine. It's not a coincidence. I believe this is a yellow card incident. Whether she's reported or not, I don't know.
I think chances of that are vanishingly small. Am I right in thinking that MPs were not required at any stage to get the jab? You've got some kind of weird exemption thing. You can even travel without one, can't you?
No. Not to my knowledge. I certainly didn't.
Right. So do you think most MPs actually...
I'm travelling tomorrow to America and they want... Everywhere I've been, they've always wanted to see my vaccine status.
Right, right. So you think actually most MPs have actually, in good faith, gone and got jabbed?
I only know one who's confided in me in the last 3 months that him and none of his family have had the jab.
Right. So he had inside information or listened to lunatics like me, maybe.
May have done.
Is this reflected in his voting record or her voting record?
Yeah, probably. He's a backbencher. I'm not going to get involved.
No. I don't want to reveal names. Heaven forbid. But. So
I mean, Chris Chope. He will tell you he's had his two whatever they were, Pfizer or AstraZeneca, and he'll openly say I'm not having any of these damn boosters.
No.
Well, I mean, you know, you caught me once, twice.
It's interesting. I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised or something. I think the core assumption was that MPs are a bunch of lying, useless, sponging, you know, they're all in on it. They all knew that, but I it doesn't sound like that was the case. And it does, I mean, at cabinet level, they must have known the truth.
Well, somebody knows, don't they? I mean, when you look, and we were told that during the lockdown, you know, the multi billionaires, the richest people in the world, managed to increase the value of their wealth by 50% when all business was most business was subdued and affected. Well, the only way that can be is if they already knew what was going to happen and was going to happen, and they'd already invested in all the right areas. That means that's insider trading because they already knew. That's the only assumption I can come to, unless they're very lucky. Isn't that the case?
Well, do you want to sketch out to me roughly what you think is going on, what all this is about?
Okay, well, gain of function research funded probably by Mr. Fauci, allegedly, being done at Wuhan. Now, I think that the virus got out in July of 19. Whether it was released deliberately or by accident, I don't know. It then, people thought we're going to have a problem. People must have known all over Europe that it was out and about. It obviously wasn't killing that many people. It wasn't overloading hospitals. Every death's a tragedy, but it wasn't being seen like that. And then suddenly it's an opportunity for something else. I mean, there are reports that Pfizer and other companies were developing the vaccine before COVID-19 was announced. It was actually a thing. So in that creates an interesting conundrum, doesn't it, that needs answering?
Yes. Out of interest, have you made connections with, for example, the central bank digital currencies, with the Great Reset, things like that? Because, I mean, in my view, they all connect. I was just wondering how far down that
rabbit hole I want to go. I'm very conscious it could well go that far. I see whatever is going on, that the thread to pick on is clearly, provably, the vaccine harms and stopping the rollout of the vaccines. And whatever unravels from there, I'm quite happy to keep unravelling. But I think we need to take the public with us, and this is the one I can prove. That's what I'm going to say on the media. But it doesn't mean I'm not have concerns about many other issues, but I want to stick to what we can win on, and I don't want to be discredited as a conspiracy theorist. But clearly, you know, we've been told things that aren't true, and there's probably a lot of things we aren't true. I mean, I'm reminded now of when I looked up, I was the guy that set up the CIA, and he's opening statement was, when we've persuaded the American, when everything the American people believe is untrue, then we will have succeeded. Oh, I think we might be there, or very close.
You've been doing some good background reading.
Some good background reading. Well, lockdown was a time for doing some background reading, wasn't it?
I can give you a reading list, Andrew. I can point you to some really interesting
stuff. So I'm paranoid enough already. I don't need any more, to be honest.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, talking about paranoia. Where are you with God? Have you made your peace?
Yeah, and he will use me as the tool he wishes to use me for. I'm confident, but I'm not going to back down on this. I don't think that those who wish to discredit me, they're not going to stop. I don't think they ever forgive or forget, so it doesn't really make any difference. What will happen will happen.
Yeah. Well, can I salute you. I mean, I think it's, look, people sort of think I'm brave for doing what I do, but I think you're in a slightly different position from me. That I think my own view, for what it's worth, on you, I think people who are saying that you're just another shill, that you're part of the controlled reveal, and that you're... Your conversion is insincere, because look at how you voted for the care home workers to get, you know, that I don't trust him. I don't think that. I know you.
No,
I know what you're And I think it's probably been quite hard for doing.
Don't you like a sinner who's seen the light and repented?
Well, exactly. I do. I quickly do.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of us have taken the vaccine. I mean, one thing I do find, I mean, I gave a couple of Saturdays ago, I attended the Colville Christian Men's Breakfast. And I already decided I was going to give this speech, the one I gave last Tuesday. I didn't know when I was going to give it, but I thought I'd just try a few of the lines out and give a little presentation. And, you know, I'm telling them, listen, guys, really, you know, I want to tell you, don't take any more vaccines and don't take any boosters and don't let any of your family do it. And certainly don't do it to children or your grandchildren. And this is why. And it only took about 5 minutes to convince the room because they joined the dots up. I was helping them join the dots up and they got it. Yeah, I've got very intellectual friends who won't let me talk about it. They don't want to know. And, you know, Mark Twain's completely right that for some people it's easier to trick them than persuade them they've been tricked. And very clever people, it's impossible to because they won't accept it. It's quite a journey for them. And it's going to shake their belief in the world. And people don't want that. I mean, this is the willful blindness again, isn't it? They want to protect themselves. They feel safe yeah. thinking that that all this isn't really happening. I wish it wasn't happening. I really wish none of it was true. I wish I was completely wrong. But all the evidence I'm seeing is not that. So as a conservative, I can't live in the world I want to live in. I have to live in the world as it is.
Yeah.
And Great. Deal with it. And we're going to have to deal with it, and it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, just a bit.
And you'll remember that the tree of democracy has to be watered with the blood of martyrs on a regular basis.
Great. I was just listening to a podcast today about the prophet Isaiah. Do you know what happened to him?
No.
He got sawed in half with a saw made of wood.
No.
Well, the teeth, I think, were made of wood. I think that he was got by a particularly nasty king with an overactive imagination.
Well, I don't know if don't tell the whips on this. Any more ideas?
Nice one, Andrew. I really appreciate you for cramming in this time to do the podcast. I know you're flying off to America and
tomorrow, not till tomorrow lunchtime.
Watch back now what you said about the CIA. They're on to you, mate.
We'll see if they let me in. They want to see my social. They want to see my social media history. I mean, that'll be interesting now, won't it?
Is it work or holiday?
It's both.
Okay.
I'm going to be meeting some interesting people. I hope some like-minded people.
Be bloody careful with your. If you're going to claim anything on expenses, make sure you report them.
I'm not claiming anything on expenses.
Okay, all right, Andrew. Happy Christmas, and good luck with all you're doing, and thank you very much. And it only remains for me to thank all my viewers and listeners. Please remember. It's increasingly difficult for people like me to make a living, and they're trying to shut me down, just like they're trying to shut Andrew down. So please support me where you can. Patreon, Subscribestar, Locals, and Substack, and Buy Me Coffee, all these different ways. Happy Christmas to you all, and thank you for listening. Bye, Andrew.
Bye-bye.